Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives, a podcast created to share the stories of the most successful, innovative, and inspirational leaders in Los Angeles. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal, and I'm here with my co-host, Todd Wilson, regional president of Greater Los Angeles for PNC Bank.
Thanks, Josh. What do you think is going to be the leading trend in 2025 for healthcare?
Well, if I had to guess, I'm guessing technology, AI.
You're spot on. It's AI. AI will be reshaping healthcare planning and delivery for decades. AI will be used to address every aspect of a patient's needs and could help speed the time of cure substantially. It's also expected to streamline information gathering by granting providers easier access to data than they've ever had before. It'll also revolutionize the delivery of mental health. This will enable greater accessibility and timely intervention to people in need.
I'm personally excited to talk about these trends. I think that ultimately the patients are the ones who benefit the most. And we have an opportunity to speak with one of the region's leading healthcare experts from UCLA Health, who's prioritizing initiatives like faster cure processes and greater access to things like mental health.
Spent a lot of time at UCLA Health in the last several years. The staff there delivers exceptional care with a very personalized approach. In particular, the nursing, and I know Janice has experience in nursing, were unbelievably helpful in my situation, and I'll be forever grateful. Josh, you've also had experience at UCLA Health, didn't you?
I have. I mean, it's a very personal topic, but one that I'm also extremely open about. As a stage 4 cancer survivor, I'm incredibly grateful for the first-class care that I've received and I continue to receive at healthcare organizations, amazing ones like MD Anderson, the Mayo Clinic, City of Hope, and of course, UCLA Health. And I'll tell you, from my standpoint, I still have a team of doctors. And I think I'm most impressed by the collaboration, not just amongst the team internally within their own health organization, but the collaboration at other health systems and other hospital systems where the doctors are only putting the patients first. It's pretty impressive. And on this note, it's a complete honor to introduce our guest today. She is a nationally recognized academic healthcare leader with more than 30 years of experience. She oversees all operations of UCLA's hospitals and clinics, as well as the health system's regional outreach strategy. She's the president of UCLA Health, the CEO of UCLA Hospital System, and associate vice chancellor of UCLA Health Sciences. Janice Spiso, it's a pleasure to have you here. Welcome to C-Speak.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here to talk about UCLA Health and the work that we're doing in our community.
It's our privilege to have you. You have had an incredibly successful 30-year career in healthcare. You've been on the front lines as a registered nurse and a chief nursing officer, as a chief operating officer, and now you oversee one of the most respected and impactful hospital systems in the country. When did you know that you wanted to get into healthcare? Maybe tell us a little bit about how your career started.
Well, thank you, Josh. I always knew that I wanted to do something to really help people. Growing up, I had just amazing role models with my parents. And my mother was a principal over 2 school districts and really a person working at a time when a lot of women didn't work. So I always knew that I could do something. And she had 3 sisters who were nurses. And oh, wow. Growing up, seeing my aunts every day go into work and then come home and just be really pleased about what they were able to do to help patients and families, it inspired both me and my sister to begin pursuing careers in nursing.
So, Janice, I know you started in nursing.
Yes.
But quickly escalated up into administration. And then in 2016, you joined UCLA Health full-time. You currently have 35,000 employees, clinical and science staffing, residents, fellows, nurses, and other staff. What was that transition like up into the boardroom? And perhaps talk about that a little bit.
Yes, thank you. It's been a long journey from the bedside to the boardroom. But what I will say, in my career, I've had the benefit of really working at almost every rung of the ladder, starting out as a staff nurse, then becoming a charge nurse, then a nurse manager, then an assistant director of nursing, then a director of nursing, then a chief operating officer, then a CEO of one hospital, and then a CEO of a health system. And I will say, in healthcare, since our business is patient care, I felt that my nursing background really prepared me for that. Because as a nurse, you are the one who 24/7 is with the patient and the family, and every member of the healthcare team that you're interacting with. The nurses are really that quarterback of the team. You right. know, every consultant coming in and out of the room. And so for me, it always gave me the lens of what the patient and the family expect from healthcare. And that was very valuable when I began getting into administrative positions where I would be responsible for making sure we were allocating resources. And I always said, I think our best success is when health systems keep the money at the bedside where the product is. So I do think throughout my career, the people that I've worked with have always felt that I really understood what they're doing kind of in the trenches.
So I have to ask, out of all your roles in nursing, what was your favorite post, so to speak?
Being a critical care nurse, I always felt was so rewarding. You were there saving the life of a patient, and the families are so appreciative and grateful of your kindness and your empathy and everything that you're doing for them. So it was one of the most rewarding, but also the one that was the most emotionally taxing, right? Because health is so important. And in the work that we do, and I've always worked in major teaching institutions where we're caring for the sickest of the sick, I would always say I felt like every day we have triumphs and tragedies for families, right? Because no one expects to be coming in. The rewards were when you could really work to ease the suffering that people were going through.
I appreciate you sharing that. Let's fast forward to you as a CEO. Who have been some of the biggest influences, the mentors, the people who've helped shape your career, and how have they impacted your decision making and your vision for leading in healthcare?
The value of mentorship is so important, and it's one of the reasons now in this job I try to always be available to mentor people. I was so fortunate in my career. At every institution that I worked in, there were amazing role models and mentors that were willing to really help me and help me learn and participate actively in the organization. I always feel my biggest role model was my amazing mother. But following that, coming up through the ranks in nursing leadership, I had great mentors at the University of Pittsburgh, University of California, Davis, 22 years at UW Medicine, and certainly even here at UCLA, I learn a lot from the team members that I work with.
Well, we are our teams. I mean, in particular, when you look at very large organizations with tens of thousands of team members. This is a two-part question, and it stems off of your comments about your experience in nursing. Do you think it helps healthcare leaders to start in a clinical setting? And then going beyond this, I guess I'd ask how you balance the demands of being an administrator, where you're running a vast healthcare organization, with also trying to stay connected to both patients and your team, your staff.
In my personal experience, it was always extremely helpful to really understand the business of patient care. So I like to round at least once a week in the patient care areas in different parts of our healthcare system. At UCLA, we do a rounding, which we call our CI care rounds. We take members of our executive team once a month and we round in the clinical areas. We talk to our staff and we also talk to patients and families.
That's amazing.
Just to find out, are there anything that we could do that could make your healthcare journey easier? We also like to hear from the staff. What barriers are you finding? What issues and challenges are you having in delivering your best care? So I feel for me, that's the best way to stay informed. Our frontline managers are always really vocal about advocating for their staff to deliver the best care. So I always appreciate that and really have an open door policy to hearing that.
They're really taking a very proactive approach.
Absolutely. We are only as good as patients say we are, right? All the awards and rankings are wonderful, but unless every patient every time has that experience, we still have work to do.
So you talk a lot about delivering the best quality of care to patients. We know that UCLA is constantly ranked as one of the best hospitals in the state, in the country, throughout every discipline. And delivering quality care is tremendously important. But as a CEO, you also have financial responsibility to run a sustainable organization. How do you balance, you know, financial sustainability with delivering the highest quality of care? And are these goals ever at conflict?
Well, I always say patient safety and quality is our number one goal. If we get that right, the finances and the sustainability of the organization usually follow, because more patients want to come to see us and to deliver care. That's really what I've always led with, is the quality and safety. We have a lot of benchmarks and scorecards so that we really know how we're doing and any areas that we need to improve in. And I believe that the investments that you make in staffing, equipment, and supplies to provide that quality of care is something that makes organizations sustain excellence over time.
Interesting. So we talked about the innovation at UCLA.
Yes.
And the cutting edge work you're doing there. How do you foster innovation and collaboration at, you know, such a large organization, 35,000 people, multiple disciplines, multiple research organizations, and make sure that you guys are at that leading edge?
I've always felt so fortunate to be at UCLA, because here we are as a leading academic health system right on a major university campus, the number one public university, surrounded with other schools of excellence, the School of Medicine, the School of Engineering, the School of Public Health, the School of Business. So we work collaboratively on a lot of innovative projects together. And being on a campus provides resources that you just can't replicate in other settings. And one of the things that we do at UCLA Health is we have a Center of Innovation and Biodesign. So we actually fund our staff, and it can be physicians, it can be nurses, it can be social workers who have leading ideas. We support them through that process from idea through commercialization if needed. So some of the novel therapeutics that come out of UCLA were begun to be seeded
almost
with funding.
Incubator there.
It's a little incubator. Yeah. We call it a startup in a box. So we surround them with the ideas to bring that forward.
And is that all through UCLA?
Or it's through UCLA Health, and we partner with the Anderson School of Business and other schools on the campus. And it's really been a way that some of our young investigators can get started with that. Additionally, because UCLA Health includes the David Geffen School of Medicine, where we do millions of dollars worth of NIH-funded research every year, we always have clinical trials and new studies going on that really spark that innovation. And I'll say from the healthcare side, one of the things that's so exciting for me to see is we'll see something that we're doing in a clinical trial, and then a year or two later, it's now available for treatment, and it's really transformed cures for patients. When I think of things like the CAR T cellular therapy program and things that were a clinical trial at UCLA, and now we can use that to really cure people with stage 4 blood cancers.
So once again, it's about collaboration, but this time you're referring to collaboration within the university system, not within the health system. So academically, which is great. So we're looking at the healthcare industry as a whole. And over the last 5, 6, 7 years, we've seen significant amounts of consolidation. We're seeing more partnerships in the industry than ever. UCLA Health has been a part of this, has been an active participant. Is this a trend? Should we expect to see this continue? How does it ultimately benefit the patient experience?
It definitely has been a trend both locally and nationally, as some smaller standalone hospitals have looked to join larger systems so that they can really have part of a scale, and it becomes a little easier to run your operating margins when you're part of a larger system. At UCLA Health, our approach to acquiring additional assets has been to expand access. So here we are in Los Angeles, over 10 million people to serve. And our 5 hospitals right now run at over 100% occupancy. So we've been rapidly trying to expand in order to get more physical beds and ORs into our hospital system so we can better serve the community. So that's why you'll see us doing things like our major investment when we purchased the former campus of the Olympia Hospital and turning that into really a state-of-the-art campus for behavioral health, both inpatient and outpatient. And then our recent acquisition in March of this past year of the former West Hills Hospital that will now be UCLA West Valley Hospital it's really been to expand beds and capacity pretty rapidly.
You think that will continue here in Los Angeles?
We're going to continue to look at that. The more patients that we have to serve really necessitates us to bring on more capacity.
Well, and as being a West Valley resident myself, we love to see UCLA come mm-hmm. into our backyard.
So obviously the last several years has been really unique with COVID here in Los Angeles. The number of unhoused has grown. There's been mental health issues. What trends do you think are most critical for the future of healthcare delivery here locally in Los Angeles?
I think Los Angeles, you couldn't have a more diverse market to work in, right? And we do know the other challenge in Los Angeles is we have some of the biggest health disparities. So a lot of our work, particularly in vulnerable populations, has been how do we look at removing barriers to access to care so that we can really serve all people in Los Angeles and actually reduce health disparities. So we have very significant efforts through our Office of Health Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. And our goal is really to work and improve the health, particularly in underserved populations as well. So one of the things that we did about 3 years ago is we started our Homeless Healthcare Collaborative, which is actually taking a fully resourced primary care clinic in a van out to the areas in Los Angeles where people are experiencing homelessness. So we know every day in Los Angeles, we have around 60,000 people who are experiencing homelessness. Even though we have clinics in a lot of different areas, we run the federally qualified health center, the Venice Family Clinic, people still weren't coming into clinics.
You're going to them.
And they would come in as a last resort when they were very sick to the emergency department. Mm. So one of the ways to remove that barrier to access is to go to them. And so in the past 3 years, we've seen over 45,000 patients through this. We've been able to actually reduce unnecessary ED visits by that population by over 35%. So we are really thrilled now to be expanding our homeless healthcare initiative to 6 vans. We were successful in showing our data to the state, and we received a Cal AIM grant to further expand that. So we look forward to continuing that
program. And
that'll
be across, spread out across LA County?
Yes, across different areas, right? We look in the areas that have the highest percentage of people experiencing homelessness so that we can go out regularly in those areas.
Well, congratulations. I know that's been an incredibly impactful initiative.
It was started with philanthropy, so I also want to thank our philanthropic community who really made a choice to invest in us. And then once we were able to show that that was actually working, we were then successful for the CalAIM grant.
So just interesting you say that. For those listeners out there who want to make an impact, who want to support what you're doing, are there ways they can give and support UCLA?
There are many ways. Through UCLA Health, we have a very active development team that really works on the philanthropic initiatives. I will say one of the things that I've felt so fortunate about working in LA is this community really does make an investment in UCLA. We have had so many generous, grateful patients, people in the community, and a lot of our board members who really want to help make a difference. And their funds have really enabled us to do incredible things for patients and families.
Aside from acquisitions of other healthcare organizations, UCLA has been making significant investments in real estate. Earlier this year, it was announced that UCLA Health acquired what was LA's former Westside Pavilion. I remember the Business Journal, we wrote about it. This was a big deal, and the intention was to turn it into a research park. How is this going to advance UCLA Health's commitment to foster, again, back to the concept of innovation and discovery?
I think this is one of the biggest things that UCLA, Los Angeles, and the state of California can really do for the whole country. This new Center for Immunology and Immunotherapy is really going to change medicine and make Los Angeles really the hub of research from people from all over the world who are the best scientists in the field. And through this, we really hope to bring forward for our community and actually the world better treatments and faster cures. In addition to housing the Center for Immunology and Immunotherapy there, the UCLA Center for Quantum Physics is also going to be based in the Westside Pavilion. So having the quantum physics and the ability to have those major supercomputers that power all the AI that will be used there as well is something that is really going to accelerate that. And the whole concept of the California Institute for Immunology at the Westside Pavilion, I really want to acknowledge the work of our Vice Chancellor, John Mazziota. It was a five-year effort at really working first with major donors who came forward for the idea to provide a large portion of the money, also with the state of California and the governor who also contributed, and then the partnership by having Google, who had the Westside Pavilion, and then bringing that asset in. So it's something that is really going to transform our community. It represents over $1 billion investment when you look at it. And I think our ability to attract the best and brightest in the world to work there is really going to be phenomenal.
So you expect people from all over the world to come to the center?
Yes. Immunology and immunotherapy. It's a public-private partnership, which is going to allow us to do things better and faster. And it will allow us to attract the top talent in the world to work there.
I have to say, as a immunotherapy patient,
yes,
it's been transformative. The effectiveness, the reduction in side effects and impact to the patient for their long-term care. So this is important. So thank you for doing this. And I will continue to watch its success and how it impacts more patients and more illnesses in the future.
Yes.
Well, this is just a great example about how you're not just thinking about UCLA or about our community. You're thinking about all of healthcare and trying to bring the best and the brightest from all over the world.
Yes.
Here.
Absolutely.
Within. That's great. We all know that any successful organization cannot succeed without a defined culture and a culture of excellence like you built at UCLA. How would you describe the culture of UCLA Health and what role do you feel you have in maintaining that culture?
UCLA has just a wonderful culture and commitment to excellence in everything that we do. So not only our exceptional clinical care to patients and families, but also our work in training that next generation of healthcare professionals. So it's a constant learning organization where people are really interested in sharing their knowledge. And then the research and discovery that we do through the David Geffen School of Medicine in all of our clinical areas really helps everyone stay on top of really what is the latest and greatest ways to make care better. But I think with all of that, what really makes us different from patients and families' perspective is the goal of really delivering acts of kindness, alleviating suffering, and making the patient and the family have a voice in their care. I always tell our team that when people come to UCLA, they expect to be getting the most knowledgeable and informed care, but what they're really going to remember is how we treated them and 100%. Treated their family. I think that background as a nurse, seeing care delivered with empathy is one of the most important things to me. And I am just so grateful to be in an organization where I feel all of our leaders and our staff value that.
A couple of years ago, I had a chance to participate on a panel with you.
Yes.
And it was about health equity and it was about access to care. And you've touched a little bit on it, but maybe share with us a little bit more UCLA Health's impact specifically on LA's underserved community?
Well, one of our biggest investments has really been the care to people who are experiencing mental health and behavioral health issues. During the pandemic, one of the things that we began seeing, children at a much younger age coming into our emergency department with depression, anxiety, and suicide ideation. So our psychiatric hospital was already overflowing. Many people in other healthcare providers in the community have long ago closed their access to inpatient psych because psychiatry usually loses money, which it does. Yeah. So we felt we need to step up and do this. We can't have people waiting for 3 days in the emergency department to get an inpatient psychiatric bed. So when we had an opportunity to purchase the closed Olympia Hospital, we embarked on really what is, with the purchase price and renovation, a $450 million investment to create what will be a beautiful inpatient and outpatient campus for adults, pediatrics, adolescents, and geriatrics. We're going to double our capacity. We'll have 139 total inpatient beds there. We'll That's have great. A 90,000 square foot outpatient mental health center that we can expand a lot of our partial hospitalization programs, which is really important for children and adolescents so they can still go to school and have their activities of daily living, but come into an intensive outpatient program after school and still stay a part of their normal community. So I'm really excited about that.
When is this scheduled to open?
This is scheduled to open in 2026. It's on time and on budget.
Wonderful.
We know it will be operating it at a loss, so we're looking kind of strategically and certainly interested in philanthropic support for that campus. But when you look at Los Angeles, you look at the health needs of the community, access to behavioral health and mental health care is one of the top ones.
Well, anyone who watches or attends Lakers games, Dodgers, Chargers, or Sparks games sees the UCLA Health logo in the stadium. So let's talk about a different type of partnership, mm-hmm. and that's what I'm going to refer to as community partnerships. How is that helping you to raise awareness for the organization and everything that you're doing?
Well, thank you. And I would like to thank all of the professional sports teams in Los Angeles that have chosen UCLA to be their team doctors. And again, it's a great reflection of our faculty and staff and their work at being number one in LA and number one in California on the U.S. News and World Report. So the teams reached out first to say, would we be their in-game physicians? So we started with the Lakers about 7 years ago, right. and then a few years later, the LA Dodgers, and then the LA Sparks, and then most recently, the Los Angeles Chargers. And that's in addition to being team doctors for all of our UCLA Bruin athletics.
By the way, great resume here.
And, so does that mean since the Lakers won shortly after you became their team doctor and the Dodgers won shortly after you
yes.
became their team doctor? So we should expect big things from the Chargers in the coming years.
That's what I'm hearing.
Chargers and Sparks, I think, are going to take it away. Their mission of really helping underserved was really aligned with ours. So we do a lot of community fairs together. We do a lot of fundraising efforts together. I just think the resources that we have when we work together and partner with our community can really impact the needs.
Josh and I were talking for a bit about major trends in healthcare, and we hit on artificial intelligence and technology. Can you talk a little bit mm-hmm. about how AI is coming into your industry and how you expect it to continue to evolve and change healthcare?
Yes, I think it's one of the most exciting things that we have on our horizon. And we've actually been using for the past several years, even before we actually called it or coined it, artificial intelligence. I'll just give you a few examples. We have a very large database in our electronic health record of de-identified data. And we can look at that data. And so any patient going to surgery, we can look at some of their vital signs or predictive elements and run that through algorithms and say, based on these, what is the risk of the patient having a complication from anesthesia? Those sure. patients then automatically get a pre-anesthesia visit by one of our experienced anesthesiologists. In things like imaging, right, we can have AI tools that also look at the CT scan or the PET scan and just put little highlights on it where they want the doctor to take a further and closer look.
Wow.
But we're using it in so many ways. And the one thing, since we have a lot of the general public listening, I want to say is that AI is not going to replace your doctor or your nurse and that care and compassion that they deliver, but it's going to be a tool that helps us better understand what's going on with you and make sure that we are continuing to deliver things in the highest quality way.
Diagnosis and treatment.
Yes. Other things that we're doing some pilots now in our clinics with ambient listening. So instead of the doctor having to spend time writing or charting on the computer, he can be talking to the patient and family, listening to them. And the ambient listening is recording everything that he's saying so that at the end of the visit, he can just look at that and really make sure that everything was transcribed accordingly. So I'm really thinking from a patient satisfaction point, tools like that, where it's making the doctor and the nurse and the team more actively present during the visit, is going to be a real satisfier. our patient privacy, for example, and HIPAA security, one of the things we've used a tool for years that is 24 hours a day scanning every record to look at who is entering in the record. And anyone who enters a patient record that isn't one of the listed providers, we automatically get a notification on and can take action. Before that, we could only do random kind of reviews and chart reviews. So this is an active surveillance to really safeguard patient privacy. So lots of great ideas. And when you think about the future and the tools that can come forward with AI, I think it's going to dramatically not only improve quality and safety, but also the patient experience.
So as we look forward, what changes do you expect the public to notice most in healthcare in the next few years? Is it that AI? Is it technology? Or is it something else?
I don't think patients and family will even notice kind of the behind-the-scenes technology that is making access more efficient, making care more relatable and more personalized, and also making their whole healthcare journey really safer and more effective. If we are using an AI tool for anything, we disclose that to the patient, right? But I really think going forward with efficiency of care, these are systems that can really help smooth that transition a lot faster.
You had an unbelievable career and ascension to the top of one of the largest healthcare organizations in this country. What advice do you have for someone who wants to make their living in healthcare?
Yes. One of the things I would tell people is to kind of slow down and not put so much pressure on themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm finding now, particularly a lot of our new workforce feel that every 2 years I need to have a promotion or a title change or something, or I'm not being successful. And the one thing that I learned in my career trajectory, and every job I was in, every step of that ladder, I was in that job for at least 5 years. So I really got to master it and learn it. When I look for leaders and people in the organization that I call are our up-and-comers and really the next group that's ready for promotions, I look at who is doing a great job at the job they're in.
Yeah.
Rather than someone who's always looking for the promotion.
Interesting.
And I tell people, if you're doing a great job in the role you're in, you will be noticed. If you're looking for opportunities to do extra things for the organization, those are really, I think, sometimes the best paths forward. In my career, I was always approached about, we're going to have this opportunity. We'd like you to think about applying. And I think it was because I was just so focused at doing my best job in whatever role I was in.
Well, that's very interesting, Janice, because as we discussed a little before, Josh and I both had personal experiences with UCLA. I probably spent 200 days in and around the hospital in the last couple of years. And whether it was the person greeting me at the front door when I was getting my badge, or the guy making my omelet, the nurse singing songs by the bedside, the doctor who didn't need to, coming by for extra rounds. You should be tremendously proud of what you're building there at UCLA. So I want to thank you personally and thank you for that.
Thank you. And I mean, that's what's so meaningful. And, you know, I always tell our team, patients would rather be anywhere else in their activities of daily life than in the hospital, right? They're dealing with the most extreme amount of stress. And anything we can do to alleviate that stress will be helpful. And we also try to take care of our workforce because, and I know this from even being a nurse, that weighs on you when you see patients and families suffering, right? So we think about a lot of things we can do for recognition and also resilience for our staff so they can still show up every day really ready to help people, and what we need to do to really nurture and support that kindness, because many times that's the most important thing that we can do for patients and families, right? The first trauma is what's happening to the patient, but the second trauma is what's happening to the patient's family. And they many times need our support as much as the patient.
100%. Janice, I really appreciate all that you do, all that your very, very large team does, the progress being made, the effort that is put out there, and, you know, really the intentionality. I think that's a great word. The intentionality of your leadership and how you want those in your organization to treat patients. So thank you for inspiring us. Thank you for taking the time today on behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal, on behalf of PNC Bank. I want to thank everybody for listening today. To ensure that you're updated on our future podcast releases, please be sure to subscribe or follow. Thank you all again. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, the language of executives.